thank the organizers in particular for staying for my talk. I'll talk about, as I mentioned, entanglement and strongly interacting, quantum critical points. And this is work that we started doing, my collaborators and I, essentially about a year ago. And it's a numerical talk. So we have several different techniques that we use to study these sort of strongly interacting lattice models. Okay, and some of these initial papers are quantum Monte Carlo. And then we turn for a little bit to basically numerical series expansions. So, for those of you that are old enough, I think a lot of the critical exponents, the universal critical exponents in the old days were calculated with series expansion, right? And it's a sort of a control, you kind of know where the biases are built into your series expansion. And Rajiv Singh really taught us how to sort of turn this over into calculating entanglement entropies. So we'll be talking about some of that. And I wanted to highlight the students who did all the work. Oops, wrong button. Hedgen Ju and Callan. And also Anne and Katie Hyatt, who's now at Santa Barbara, performed this numerical link cluster work, which I'll show one slide for. Stephen Ingalls, who's in the audience. And also, in particular, Jean-Marie Stéphane, who's a postdoc of Paul Fenley's. And he made a very important contribution to calculating one of these shape functions for gapless systems that I'll show you later on. So I know all of our brains are full, so there's not much information in my talk. Actually, just some simple point form things here. So I'm really going to talk about Rennie entropies, so which we're now familiar with from some of the previous talks. And we've been very successful as a community, I think, we've demonstrated in this workshop in characterizing, gap spin liquids, essentially, right? So exotic gap topological phases with Rennie entropies. So there's a subleading correction to the area law. So my apologies, I'm only going to talk about two dimensions or 2+1. I never thought of doing 6+1 until the last talk. Maybe we'll get to that someday. But so these are all two-dimensional systems where the area law is just a one-dimensional boundary. And so, of course, the topological entanglement entropy is a subleading correction. So we'd like to ask the question, can we sort of emulate the success when looking at either gapless spin liquids or critical points or something like that? And one of the reasons I became interested in this a while ago was this prediction by Brian and Senthil that, these subleading terms can be used as a resource to distinguish like unconventional or deconfined quantum critical points. So many models, we have sort of candidate deconfined quantum critical points, and we're still struggling to identify these things clearly in numerics. For example, we have this real nice example of a bosonic model with an XY star transition. It's like a fractional C2 spin liquid to a superfluid phase transition. And one of the predictions in this nice paper is that, the universal subleading piece, or one of the universal subleading pieces of the Rennie entropy, we'll have an extra Z2 component in this special, deconfined critical point. So one question is, are we anywhere near calculating these quantities? So in D greater than one, we're still learning how all the various shape dependencies of this subleading term behave. And so I'll talk more about that. That's a nice way of saying we don't know a lot about what's going on. And ultimately, we want to compare field theory and numerics, which I believe is sort of the goal of studying universal quantities, right? And so some of the geometries that we want to compare between lattice simulations and continuum field theories still have to be sorted out. And this is one of the main points that I want to make in my talk. So in this talk, I'm going to examine the shape dependence of these subleading terms of the area law with mostly quantum Monte Carlo, but I'll show some series expansion results too. And I'm really only going to look at a simple interacting quantum critical point, so the Wilson-Fisher fixed point, or in my language, the transverse field Ising model at its quantum critical point. Okay, so I just have a simple transverse field Ising model. And the way we attack this in quantum Monte Carlo is we actually simulate directly this so-called N-sheeted Riemann surface, which is, so this is like a D plus one dimensional simulation cell. Okay, and so it's a one dimensional system here, but and in this imaginary time direction, we have multi-sheeted surface depending on the N of the Rennie index. So that N is the order of the Rennie entropy that we're going to calculate. And this is essentially the only way that we can calculate entanglement entropies in quantum Monte Carlos. And it's also true, essentially this is how things are calculated in these replica field theories also. And, I know Leon tried hard to scare you guys all away from the integer any entropies, but you don't have to be that scared of them. Sometimes the integer any entropies are all we have. And so before I start talking about two-dimensional systems, let me just sort of briefly review what we know about entanglement entropy scaling in one dimension for gapless systems. Okay, so this is my outline. So after we take a look at that, I'll move on to looking at two specific geometries in two-dimensional systems that are amenable to essentially quantum Monte Carlo studies or lattice numerics. And that's when I take a torus, so I have periodic boundary conditions in two dimensions, and I cut that torus into two cylinders. And that'll have some shape dependence, depending on the length of those two cylinders. And the other geometry I'll talk about is this essentially like a square rectangular region that has four corners. Okay. So one dimension, we all know what's going on in one dimension. This is an argument that my students taught me last week. And I remember hearing it from Matt Hastings a little while ago. And it's just a simple heuristic sort of density of states or mode counting argument that gives us sort of the leading order term to the entanglement entropy in one dimension. And so if we're in a critical system where we have scale invariance, let's imagine or let's assume that we have order one unit of entanglement entropy at each length scale in a renormalization group sense. Okay, so at the smallest length scale, before I do any coarse graining, I just have order one bit of entanglement entropy, and I have one of these things crossing the boundary. So after a coarse graining step, okay, so I just make block spins with a rescale factor of two there. I just assume, again, at this length scale, I also have order one unit of entanglement entropy. So I've added a one there. And again, here's the next RG step, and I've added one unit of entanglement. And I have three, addition of three units of entanglement, which is, this is an L equals eight system, so that's log base two. So, Matt always told me these arguments for mode counting, and I always wondered how 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equaled log, and I only figured that out a little while ago. how many times he wrote that on a chalkboard for me. And as we know, that's not the whole story. That's the leading order term for the scaling of entanglement entropy in 1D. But there's also a shape dependence, or I might call it an aspect ratio dependence, but the only aspect ratio I have is really the length of this X over the total length of the system X over L. So it makes sense that in one dimension, I have a constant times this log L plus some shape-dependent piece that depends on the aspect ratio. And in fact, we know exactly what the form of this scaling is from conformal field theory. And here's your leading order log, and here's your subleading shape dependence, which is added to that, which is log sine, pi X over L. Okay. And this, there's been a lot of success in using this formula to explain numerical results. It's well sort of tuned to look at lattice. I have L over A here, where that's A is my lattice scale. And we also know the form for periodic versus, I have this eta for periodic versus open boundaries. And so in particular, DMRG can easily access, for example, the coefficients in front of here using very simple sort of a lattice scale simulation. So here's a Heisenberg model. It's one of your, the first DMRG you'll write. And this is on a finite size 128 size system. And this x-axis is just, how many sites are in my entangled region. And this shape, I just want to burn into your mind. This is sort of the sensitive probe of gapless behavior, essentially, in some sense. We'll see this also in 2D occurring. So this sort of curve or this shape dependence is characteristic of a gapless system. And if this was gapped, if I did, spin one or a two-leg ladder or something like that, I might have some sort of edge effect. And then very soon, this would level off to be flat. Okay. So this is the von Neumann and also the second Rennie entropy. And if I rescale the x-axis to be this log of this chord length or whatever they call it, then I can just do a very naive fit and extract that central charge of the associated conformal field theory from that. And I can get it essentially to some arbitrary accuracy as long as I can go to very large L in my numerical simulation. So this second Rennie entropy will also give us access to that C, it has 1 plus 1 over N or something in the coefficient. And you'll see in the second Rennie entropy, there's also some sort of even odd branching effect, some oscillation. And that's also known to be a universal subleading term that occurs for these higher order Reni entropies. And it's not a finite size effect or anything like that. And you can read about that more in Pasquale's paper here. But this was something that was observed numerically before it was sort of figured out in the field theory. So it kind of illustrates the synergy we're looking for. So in two dimensions, okay, I'm going to go through the same type of argument, and I'll start with doing what I call smooth boundaries in two dimensions, so there's no vertices associated with them. So you might ask, what's the leading order term? And we've heard a lot about the area law and gap systems, and I mean, we all know this is the area law. But if I go back to this mode counting argument, I can also see that I recover an area law, even if I assume, order one entanglement entropy at each length scale again. So here's my first length scale before any RG coarse graining. So I could order one, times L for my L equals 8 lattice here. And I perform an RG step. And now there's less, entanglement across that boundary by half. So it's L by 2. I do the next RG step. I get L by 4. And you sum this geometric series up. And it gives you another L. So I'm still at L. I'm just 2 times L, right? So it's not like there's any multiplicative log or anything that's coming out of this. And so this should be really our starting point for thinking about even gapless or critical two-dimensional systems, is that we're still going to have an area law just like the gap case. And again, we've looked at all sorts of, a variety of interacting models, let's just say. And everyone knows this this important violation which comes for fermions. So I'm basically only going to talk about bosonic systems. So the general expectation is that there's a subleading term to this area law, an additive term, and that is, I would say, a more complicated geometry-dependent subleading term. Okay? It depends a lot on the shape of this region, and we've heard a lot of forms for this shape-dependent thing that I'm just calling gamma in general. And in field theory, often this is calculated for curved surfaces. So curved surfaces in 2 plus 1, I believe, give you additive constants. If you're in higher dimensions, they can give logarithmic singularities and so on. And one thing that was already stressed in the talk was that in lattice numerics, we have this pixelization problem. So we can't actually simulate a curved surface. It's not known basically how we would approach a thermodynamic limit or how well controlled the thermodynamic limit would be approached in finite size lattice systems because of this pixelization. I want to avoid studying pixelization at this stage of my life, basically. So we do what we can for smooth boundaries and for vertices that make sense. And I just want to mention one result, which we hoped was going to be a sort of big success in a synergy between between lattice numerics and field theory. And that was Max Mitlitsky's prediction of a universal subleading term that comes if we move away from the critical point, thus inducing a finite correlation length. And they predict in this paper here a universal subleading term, and that coefficient is something that could be calculated, and Max did it in a small epsilon and small, 1 over n, at the Wilson-Fisher fixed point, so at the interacting fixed point. And they predicted this very striking change of sign as you go through the von Neumann point. So near the von Neumann point somewhere, if you're varying this Reni index n, they expected this R to change sign. So later on, Max told me that this actually violates some entanglement monotonicity theorem, and which I don't know anything about. And I don't know whether to trust, past Max or future Max. So we did a series expansion of this. So Anne Callan's in the audience. So she did a numerical link cluster expansion. And this is something a little different than these quantum Monte Carlos. We can actually access all the alpha or all the n entropies. And so we did the transverse field Ising model and extrapolated somehow to get this finite size correlation length. And we actually didn't. We do see some funny behavior around n equals 1, but I don't see any change in sign in this so-called universal term. So we have some numerical value for it, which may or may not be useful in the future. But so far, it looks like we agree with present Max or Cassini and Huerta actually. So that's just one illustration of how we try to make connection to field theory. But what I want to talk about is more of these geometries that are amenable to quantum Monte Carlo simulations. Yeah, this one is for a disk, yeah. So, which is why I don't know why it would apply here. but maybe Rob knows, but I definitely don't. This is just something Max told me. So, yeah. So on to things that I know less about. So in Quantum Monte Carlo, we typically do finite size systems. Yeah, so, you know, what I didn't mention here was in series expansion, we're tiling the lattice with different shapes of clusters, and we're kind of approaching the thermodynamic limit in some different way than we do in Quantum Monte Carlo, where we do finite size toroidal or cylindrical lattices and scale these things up systematically. But in that case, you know, in analogy to 1D, I might expect that you know, my subleading term would depend on the aspect ratios of my two cylinder lengths, so X over LX, I'll call it, and LX over LY, which is just the, you know, if I have a rectangular lattice. And so before I show you data on the transistorializing model critical point, we have studied these previously in other gapless systems, and just, you know, for historical interest, I guess. You know, we looked at initially RVB, so single, like nearest neighbor RVB singlets, just a wave function simulation, and also the Heisenberg model, because these are kind of the simplest quantum Monte Carlo to do. And we do see evidence of, you know, we do see a reflection of the gapless behavior of these wave functions in these types of geometries. And this is that curvature I mentioned that exists in one dimension. So if you don't have a, if you have a gap system, again, you expect at some point after you get past edge effects for this kind of plot to go to a constant here, but we see this nice curvature. But there's, you know, complications with studying these wave functions. I mean, RVB, as Matt Hastings says, is kind of sick somehow. It actually has an even odd branching effect. Okay, I'll get back to this, but there's a, you know, it's a reflection of the dimerization essentially that's occurring sort of on a lattice length scale. And the Heisenberg model has an additive logarithmic term. Okay, so this is something that we found in with Max and Tarun a couple of years ago. And, you know, this additive logarithmic term I'll mention again actually comes from the existence of Goldstone modes there. So it kind of, you know, you have to add a log to this, a log L to this type of scaling for the, when you're breaking continuous symmetry. So the RVB is interesting because it motivated this study by essentially Jean-Marie Stefan, who I mentioned before, to look at the explicit shape dependence of each of those branches in this RVB wave function. And so he actually attacked this by looking at this quantum Lifshitz field theory, some sort of Z equals 2 field theory that describes these like RK type Hamiltonians. And this is the function he derived. So it has these Jacobi theta functions and these whatever Dedekind eta. And it has the two aspect ratios that I mentioned. And actually, you know, you get very precise correspondence between this field theory. So actually for the odd, or for the blue branch, the odd branch here, you change this Jacobi theta from 3 to 4, but whatever, just some Jacobi theta function. And we also have finite size results, and there's actually fairly big finite size effects. But in these dimer simulations, you can get essentially excellent correspondence between this shape-dependent function and what's derived in the field theory.
So this is the wrong dimerization, then it's narrow as well.
It's very strong dimerization. Right. Oh yeah, that's here, right? That's LY over LX is 2, and this is 1 and this is 2. So I mean you vary the degree of this dimerization in the wave function somehow, depending on that. So again, this results exactly at that field theory, at that critical, at that fixed point, which has essentially nothing to do with the fixed points that we're talking about when we're talking about the transistorializing model or so. But again, then again, this log sign from 1D has nothing to do with the functional form that we expect in 2D either. So what we can do now is just go ahead and examine the shape dependence at this transistorializing model quantum critical point, and just see how our data fits to these sort of functions that we have. And so to do this, we invented a new type of quantum Monte Carlo, which I was going to talk about, but it's funnier to just mention that, you know, actually Anders invented this type of quantum Monte Carlo. I was visiting him like a year ago, and he wrote a paper on this nice zero temperature projector method, and then he lost his laptop. And you know, as numerical people, we never do any backups or anything. So he actually lost all of his data. He lost his paper. And so now Stephen and I have just claimed this as our own. So we have a new paper on the archive. And if you're interested, details this zero temperature algorithm. I forgot this is being recorded. So my apologies to Anders. the data that I'm going to show now with the zero temperature projector method I'm not going to talk about is something that's fairly moderately, I guess, moderately easy to get, 200 to 300 CPU years. Like, it seems reasonable, right? I don't know. So, okay, I have two shape functions that I can fit to this geometry. So just, you know, motivated by one dimension, I can use the log sign, which, by the way, you know, we initially thought everything was fitting quite well, these sort of log sign forms. And then I use Jean-Marie's J, we're calling it, this Jacobi theta function thing from the quantum Lipschitz point. And so that's the teal here, and the 1D form is the orange. And you can kind of argue more or less the teal fits better. And you got to play these games where you like do data exclusion, like you exclude the fits, you exclude these points from the fit, and then you would see it kind of get fixed up here and so on. But you know, I always caution against overanalyzing very limited data sets. And even though this is 36 by 36, I mean, you can't really read in too much more than what you see from this plot. Basically, you get a kind of warm, fuzzy feeling that this thing fits a bit better. What? Really? We could go to much larger system sizes and it would resolve this a bit better. But so what is actually nice is if I just in my fitting functions, I have this coefficient I'm calling C, and I let it be lattice size dependent. Okay, for this one-dimensional form, I actually see that there's a clear L dependence remaining in this coefficient. So it's actually a function of L. Okay, there's some, I don't know what kind of functional form it is, but if I use this quantum Lipschitz or this RVB shape function, I actually get, you know, data that within error bars and within fit wiggling and everything is pretty much consistent with being independent of L. Okay, so that's another bit of evidence that this quantum Lipschitz or this RVB shape function is fitting our data at this quantum critical point, you know, reasonably well. So that's it for the two-cylinder entropies. Again, the numerical results at this quantum critical point, I should stress, are consistent with no additive logarithm. So there's no, you know, this is also true in these RVB, and we've calculated free fermions or pi flux fermions on a square lattice. And unlike the case where you have like, you know, broken continuous symmetry, like the Heisenberg model, we don't have an additive log. And actually, in that other case, is also interesting because the coefficient of this thing is universal, depends on the number of Goldstone modes in the dimension. Okay, so that's in this paper by Max and Tarun, which, as far as I understand, I think they've never published. It's still in the archive. So there's some universal thing there that's kind of even interesting, but we don't see it here. You know, it's fun to speculate regarding the universality of this J, but I'm not a fun guy, so I won't speculate. And one thing I would stress is that we just need, you know, more systematic QMC calculations. We have all sorts of fixed points that we can access with finite size lattice quantum Monte Carlo. So then I just want to mention briefly some other universal contributions that are subleading to the area law. So these are the ones due to vertices, and I don't know if you can see it well there. See, Ashwin. If I... You're leaving? So... I'm done citing him anyway. So let's look at the same mode counting argument that I looked at in the smooth boundary case and also the 1D case. And again, if I just assume that each corner is giving me, for some reason, you know, order one unit of entanglement entropy, then if that contributes on every length scale again, because I'm at a critical point. Then when I do the RG step, I still only have one corner, and so I add a one there. And I do the next RG step, and I still only have one corner, so I add a one. And then again, I got 1 + 1 + 1 equals log, which I finally understand after all these years. And if you want a more sophisticated analysis, I suggest you read this paper by Cassini and Huerta. It's a different paper than I mentioned about this entanglement monotonicity thing. So they've actually calculated this universal term as a function of the angle of the vertex, you know, in a continuum field theory. And this is something you can compare to lattice numerics because we can access a 90 degree corner, no problem, right? So I can put 90 degrees in here. And this is what I should have, area law plus, you know, this universal coefficient that's angle dependent times logarithm. This is free bosons, yeah. So the coefficient of the log is also the sum. So as long as you know, I'm going to put a square or something, as long as my corners are far apart that they don't interact, I can just add the contributions from all the corners. So this is Cassini Huerta's data from their paper. This corner cut, yeah, so it's a scalar free field theory. So they have again, they use a replica field theory to calculate n equals 2, n equals 3, that's these curves. And they do some sort of simulation to get these numbers for n equals 1. But this is theta, so the number I'm interested in is n equals 2, which is what I can get with quantum Monte Carlo. So n equals 2, pi by 2, yeah, so 90 degrees. And we tried lifting this from the postscript, but at some point somebody just called him, Horatio, and he's like, it's minus 0.0064. So I hope he's right. I have Grant here, a student now recalculating this these curves, so I don't have to rely on phone calls to Argentina anymore. So it's 0.0064 for the free field theory. So now this is my quantum critical point of my transverse field Ising model. And so the first thing to mention is that we do this by fixing the aspect ratio of the square on the torus. So it's like, you know, L by 2, L by 2, and an L by L torus. And then we scale. We do a whole bunch of different system sizes, like separate simulations. And so each one of these corresponds to a different toroidal simulation. So from whatever, this is the boundary length from basically 20 to 80 or something like that. And this is something, yeah, so this is basically area, this is the data minus the area law, something didn't show up here, minus a constant term. We just add a constant term to these fits. So what's left over is purely the logarithmic subleading term, okay? And this blue line is a logarithmic fit. So you can see how well the data agrees to within statistical errors. I don't know what happened there. With this logarithmic form. And so we can just extract from the fits the coefficient of that, and we get minus 0.006 plus or minus 0.002. Okay, so we're not the first to do this. So again, you have four of these corners on a square embedded in a torus. And we've calculated this actually previously in this numerical link cluster expansion that also gave us this this R of N, we were calling it. So here we have access to all the Rennie indices or Rennie orders from von Neumann, and actually less than von Neumann onward. And that point that I just showed you from the QMC was for n equals 2. So this value here, that's this point here. And you can see my error bars, so it's 0.006, you know, up to 0.008 or 0.004. And Cassini and Huerta's calculation from the field theory is these green things. So you see I agree with everything. That's why you guys like me so much. It's you know, I agree with the Gaussian fixed point. I agree with actually a series expansion calculation that Rajiv Singh did. You know, I agree with our numerical link cluster and everything. So, yeah, I didn't mention the series expansions. They have an advantage in that they can isolate the corner term, whereas I have to subtract off the area law. You know what I mean? They can isolate these subleading terms from the sort of dominant area law piece. Whereas the quantum Monte Carlo, everything's mixed together, and you have to do these types of fits where you're subtracting things off in order to get that subleading term. So it's quite a bit more difficult in quantum Monte Carlo. So Glenn and Giffrey are here. So this is their tensor tree network number, and it's as far off from the field theory as I am with the numerical link cluster expansion. So, you know, it'd actually be nice to sort of use, I think, the tensor tree network to look at this as a function of n. So as you can tell from this, we're just starting to get a handle on these numerical values for the sort of the simplest interacting fixed point, right? There's a lot of work left to be done, and you know, the question comes up here: is this even a useful quantity to distinguish between the non-interacting theory and the interacting theory? You know, maybe we should be going to larger Rennie indices because, you know, here you're sort of at this part of the function where it seems that everything's almost of the same value. You know, it's an interesting universal value, but is it useful to distinguish critical points? That's still in the open. It'd be nice, you know, if you guys can make yourself useful and calculate, you know, epsilon and 1 over n at the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. I'm sure somebody can do that. Max is tired of me asking him. He won't answer my emails anymore. It'd be nice to see the tensor networks and even more series expansion. We could do that to fill out this curve. And, you know, the quantum Monte Carlo can move on. Because I think we've done as good as we can for this, and look at some, maybe like we can do like an O3 critical point or something like that. So my final gift to you is finishing early. I just want to mention that, you know, I just want to wrap up by saying that, you know, we have the I guess, the simulation technology to take a much more serious look at these gapless subleading, you know, these subleading terms and gapless wave functions and all the shape dependence and all this type of stuff. Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, it's fun to think that we might have some sort of synergy between numerics and field theory and holography, like the stuff that Rob Myers and other people are working on. You know, is if, you know, if we could combine sort of entanglement monotonicity with values of these universal quantities that we could actually calculate using lattice simulations, I mean, then we'd be in really good shape to, for example, like in 1+1, you can constrain the RG flows between fixed points and so on with these C theorems, right? So there is some sort of nice high stakes that would be nice to look at. And Tarun Grover's been talking about this, and I thought he was supposed to give a talk here, but something happened. So the best talk that never happened, but he has a chalkboard talk online at the KITP from November last year, which I encourage you guys to look at. So he basically assumes these entanglement monotonicity theorems and shows how it constrains certain fixed points in 2+1. You know, it's like in condensed matter, you know, systems of condensed matter interest. So it's really nice. He's got a paper on that. And my other answer to Leon's, you know, unabashed slamming of the Rennie entropies is that these will be the things that will eventually be measured. Okay, so Dima's here. John, he has a nice paper. John Carty. And there's a very serious paper now by Peter Zoller. Sorry, a less serious paper by Peter Zoller, where they talk about how these second Rennie entropies will eventually be measured in cold atom systems. And I think it's, you know, the form of this multi-sheeted sort of surface and everything like that. This is really what's going to make these things possible for us to look at even someday in condensed matter systems, I believe. Okay, thank you very much.
Would you mind explaining why the photonic system doesn't give rise to log tail fraction, while the muon system gives rise to the log tail?
Well, so for the fermionic system, you have to do this mode counting argument in k space over the Fermi surface. Maybe is one way to think about it. Actually, a simpler way might be if you have this one-dimensional. So imagine I'm building up ladders, one-dimensional ladders that have a leading order term of log L, and then my coefficient of this depends on the number of gapless modes, which is proportional to the number of legs in that ladder. Then you would basically get some sort of like L log L from that. This is the guy that you should be asking.
So in the So can you get fractional n?
Not that I know. For the multi-sheeted stuff, I basically take my D+1 dimensional simulation and just replicate it. So this is second Rennie entropy, I could get third, fourth, and fifth, and so on. So we don't have any, or we haven't thought of a way of doing fractional ones. But this linked cluster expansion that I talked about, it's like a series expansion. It's basically based on a diagonalization, which gives you all, you know, it gives you the full reduced density matrix. So in that case, we had a plot with it calculated there, but not so far in quantum Monte Carlo.
Like how, obviously when you actually calculate these things, you're going to have some error. Do you have any feel for if you have a sort of strongly interacting fixed point versus a prefixed point, what the actual magnitude of the difference of the universal part you're trying to extract would be, and how that would compare with the kind of errors you can get?
This, for example?
Yeah, for example, right. So I mean.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, the Gaussian, that green, the green point's yeah. Exact, and all of these numerical methods have different features, let's just say, or problems, you know. So in that case, it's not clear if it makes sense, you know, if it's going to be easy to distinguish. This thing of maxes was actually quite promising, you know, wherever it was, because this was a sign change. Okay, and that actually happened in second order in epsilon. So Max did like a heroic effort in calculating this sign change in this leading coefficient. And so here something's totally off. You know, I don't know why we don't see this in the numerics. So this could be an artifact of the sort of small finite size clusters that we use in this series expansion, or maybe there's something wrong with the perturbation. I mean, who knows?
Questions? Do you want to take over?
Okay, yeah.